For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's just do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's Moonrise by Memphis/Arkansas musician Bailey Bigger, whose second album, Resurrection Fern, released on Friday. She's having a local record release party concert on Thursday at Crosstown Concourse in the Green Room. I wrote a story about her that published yesterday.
I've tweeted it out. I'd urge people to read it. Bailey Bigger and her brother Wiley go to Idlewild Presbyterian Church with me. That's how I knew them first. What is, by the way, so the album's called Resurrection Fern.
Right.
Reading your piece, that's Resurrection Fern is a thing?
Yeah, it's a plant. I mean, I didn't know a lot about this. I had to research it myself. But it's a plant that's common, and maybe in other places too, but it's common in the southeast U.S., and it's a kind of fern, wild fern or whatever, and it will shrivel up and look like it's dead or dying, but when it rains again, it'll spring back to life. That's the name, Resurrection Fern.
So how's the album?
The album's very good. It's, you know, if you like that style of music, which I do, it's a different style of songwriting than like on her first record a couple years ago, which was more, in her own words, more of like a conventional is my word, but more of like a batch of love songs, your typical kind of thing. And this is a little bit more meditative. It's a little bit more sort of rooted in solitude, rooted in nature, a little bit more poetic, but I think it's quite good.
Resurrection Fern, Bailey Bigger, and it's Thursday night is the
album. Thursday night at the Green Room at Crosstown Concourse, which I will not be at because I'll be at the Grizzlies game, but I don't know whether there are tickets still available or not, but you can, you know, go online and find out.
Okay. All right. Grizzlies lost last night, disappointing fashion. Let's start though first with Jay Huff. He was elevated to a 4-year contract. They obviously didn't have to do it now, but they did. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think different ways to look at that. Well, on one hand, one way is that he just earned it. Dude just earned it. And, and when you earn it as thoroughly as he has, it's good to reward a guy. I think it was he had left no doubt that he was a main roster caliber player and someone who they wanted to play for the Memphis Grizzlies, in fact, needed to play for the Memphis Grizzlies. Right. And so the idea of let's wait and find out whether we want to keep this guy, I think they'd already found out. You still could have kept him for – you still could have had him on the two-way for 47 more games and not put money on your books and whatever. I suspect maybe part of it was for the sake of both sides, let's get it done now. This guy's been a journeyman. He's bounced around the league for years. He's 40 or on the outskirts of the league. He's 27 years old. The idea of him, like, having a multi-year contract for millions of dollars is a real life-changing thing for him. Right. I'm sure he wanted that. And for the Grizzlies – if he keeps doing playing this well, who's to say that he would even take this contract? You know, if you get 2 or 3 months into the season, do they look up and say, you know, we could be an unrestricted free agent next summer? I don't know. But I think for all parties involved, this is probably a good decision.
It was a Drew has a column up about him, which is and his quotes are really charming in the column, including he said people come up to him and say, did you used to play basketball?
Right.
And he said, I don't look that old. And he says, but I guess there's a lot of wisdom in this beard.
Right.
It's the beard that makes him look like he used to play basketball.
Yeah.
And then he says if he has to buy people dinner because of his new contract, he's going to take them to McDonald's and put them in the back of the car and shout back, what do you want? Like, that's it.
15 value meals. Here we go.
What's the I've because I'm not there every day anymore. Is he chatty? What's he like as a post-game interview or a pre-game interview?
I would, Drew was doing that, so yeah. I was writing and other stuff. I haven't really talked to Jay Huff yet, so I don't really have a feel for that.
Is the fact, so he is now not just in the rotation, he is closing out games. Zach Edey isn't, like Brandon Clark.
Yeah, I think the ideal situation would be Brandon Clark closing out games. That's the way the team is set up. That is what they've done in the past.
Right.
And Clark's just not plan yet, let's hope it's yet, at the level that you were previously accustomed to. And so in the absence of Brandon Clark as a game closer, I don't know if he's closed at all. I mean, you get Santi Aldama there too, but he's right. Certainly been a late game option for the Grizzlies.
What do you make of Brandon Clark's?
I want to give it some more time. He's only played two games with Jaren. He's only played one game with Ja and Jaren. And one of the things about Brandon is he's a particularly good fit with Ja and with Jaren, right?
Right.
And I think that helps him. And you haven't gotten much of that yet. Let's give it a few weeks, I would say, on him. But do I have some concern that there's just enough the diminishment in athleticism that it really impacts who the player he is? Yeah, I think that's a real concern until it's not.
His contract is how long?
I think he has 2 years left. I think that's right. 2 years left at 12 per.
I see. It has been fascinating. It'll be interesting to see how the big rotation plays out because two players, who Edey and Brandon Clark, you would have said before the year began, well, that's, you know, and they've sort of both in different ways
right. Disappointed.
And then Santi and Jay Huff,
right,
who Santi was sort of forgotten guy and Jay Huff was like nobody or whatever,
right.
They have emerged.
Yeah, Jack LaRavia played well last night. Who can play at the four? You still have Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson on deck. So there are options in there. And I think it's good for the Grizzlies. When Jaren's the only truly sure thing in the front court, it's good to have a lot of options and see, like, because it may vary week to week, month to month in terms of who's right. The better option and who's not.
All right, well, last night, obviously a disappointing loss. What do you attribute it to?
It was a lousy loss.
It was a lousy loss. It was a bad loss.
In a long season, even in a good season, you're going to have games you lose you think you should win. That's always going to happen.
Right.
But that was a particularly lousy loss. Like that just should not have happened last night. I think the number one thing is you have to point to is the defense. And I got a column that'll go up in an hour or two and sort of my weekly long form column I tend to do. And one of my secondary things I do, I have a lead and I have four sort of secondary items. One of the secondary items I called 3-point defense deja vu. And there, I feel like we've seen this before. Like,
every early season.
Yeah, and I actually have a little chart where I go through and I show the last four seasons for this team, their opponent 3-point defense in the first month of the season is worse than it ends up being for the whole season. And Taylor Jenkins, even before the game last night, like he talked after the game about, you know, we didn't play like a defense and he was mad about it.
He was mad.
But before the game, he got asked something about the defense to that point. You know, for the first three games, and he said something like, it seems like the history here has been, you know, that we get off to the slow start on defense. And yes, that is the history. And so if you feel like you've seen this play before of, like, the Grizzlies, like, you know, swarming the paint on defense and giving up wide open 3-point shots and right. Just getting torched by a team that they shouldn't lose to, you have seen that play before. And that's what happened last night. Most of those threes were wide open.
We went through it. Jeffrey looked at the stats of closest defender. And what was it, Jeffrey? 49 of the 53, there was no one within 4 feet.
No, I went back and watched them all this morning.
It's crazy.
There was 41 of the 53, no one was within 6 feet.
Yeah.
And then...
No, there were like... I literally went... It was like 25 threes. I watched all 25 made threes. And there were maybe three or four. I was like, okay, that guy made a good shot. And the rest were just like... Either, you know, you can call it over... You can characterize it how you want, but when they make the shot, you characterize it in a bad way. And so it's like either people are over-helping, people are slow to get back, everyone's sagging into the paint, overreacting to the paint, which sets up the open three. And that's obviously not what the Grizzlies want it to look like defensively. But on the other hand, that is sort of a history here. You can go back to the Mike Budenholzer teams in Milwaukee. Those teams get criticized all the time for giving up too much 3-point shooting. Well, you look up at the end of the year, they had one of the best defenses in the league, right. But there would be games here and there where they would get lit up from three because their focus was protecting the paint, right? You protect the paint, you give up the three. There's something structural about that. But I think Taylor Jenkins would want to see, even within that sort of game plan, quicker, more aggressive, like rotations back out and stuff like that.
It doesn't help, obviously, that Vince is not available, but as you point out, this is a history.
Yeah, but I think this case, this is not like you're giving up one-on-one.
Right.
This is a team scheme and team effort situation, and the history of the Taylor Jenkins teams has been that it starts out rough and gets better over the course of the season. You look up at the end of the year, and they're one of the best defenses in the league. That is what has been the pattern.
Okay.
Still doesn't excuse that loss last night.
Just hideous loss last night. There has been a lot of focus on the minutes that Jaren played, and I will tell you, watching it from on my couch as the lead, so when Jaren leaves the game, they're up 106-98 with 8:57 left. By the time he comes back at 3:43, they are down 112-117. That was absolutely fatal.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily just like you should have brought him in early or late. You could have played him more early,
right,
too.
Yes,
so to me, it's more the total minutes thing.
24 minutes.
And Taylor Jenkins did allude after the game to, you know, the sort of ramp-up stuff with, because he'd had the sore hamstring and all that. I this is always a difficult thing because, like, you're not inside players' bodies and you're not a medical person or whatever. I do feel like the Grizzlies tend towards over-caution on some of this stuff. And I feel like if you can play 24 minutes in the game, you can probably play 27.
Right.
And like that 27 may have been enough, you know? Desmond Bane not coming off an injury thing as far as I know. And 31 is like a decent amount of minutes. But you look around the league and like it's not that much for a star. It's just not.
It's just not. Well, and this goes back to, so he did. He alluded to, in the post game, he alluded to the bringing him back slowly. He also alluded to, I tried to get him in and there was no, you know, there was no timeout. He could have called a timeout, honestly, to get him in, but whatever, he didn't. But then I go back to the question you asked before the home opener,
which is the lead of what I wrote about.
Because what he really talked about was, I was stunned, actually. You asked this question about the flat minutes distribution and I expected him to say ramping people up stuff. Instead, he said, basically, and you can correct me, this is consistent with our playing faster, our philosophy, and it seemed more philosophical than health or load management related.
Yeah, there was a component of other stuff to it, but the root answer was it's more strategic. My question was, is this reactive to the schedule, reactive to injuries, reactive to whatever?
Altitude.
Or is it strategic?
Yes, right.
And he allowed that there's some reactive elements, but his core answer was it's mostly strategic. And I think it's strategic in the sense that they're test driving this too. Like, you know, if it doesn't work, they may not. But the idea of they want to play a deep rotation, like he's always played 10, but he's been playing 11. Only 10 last night because they only had 10 real players.
Right.
But he's been playing 11, like in the first quarter. And with so a bigger rotation, smaller minutes at the top end, and quicker substitutions. And the idea is that, you know, we can play better. We can go hard for 48 minutes on both ends of the floor at the pace we want to play if we do it like this. One of the weird things about that is that they've been better in the first halves and the second halves of games.
Right.
And so you would think if, like, you know, we're playing a deep
down,
and fast, and we're going to wear them down, then that's not been happening. Now, is there a chance that that happens more as you get deeper into the season and teams are not as fresh? Right now, teams are fresh, and it's not working. Will it work over time? Maybe, maybe not. Will they go away from it? My conclusion is they will go away from it to a degree. In the first week of the season, this does not include last night's game, but because I'd pre-written a lot of this before last night. Week one of the NBA season, Desmond Bane led the Grizzlies at 28 minutes a game. The only other team in the league that had a leading minutes player lower than that was Golden State with Steph Curry at 26 point something. Well, Golden State won their first two games by like 80 points combined.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The Grizzlies, I want to say 20 something of the 30 teams had three or more players on their roster averaging more than 30 minutes, and the Grizzlies had zero. Like Dyson Daniels was playing more than any player for the Memphis Grizzlies. Jordan Hawkins, who's a player, a person who exists, was playing more than anyone for the Memphis Grizzlies. Taurean Prince was averaging more minutes than anybody with the Memphis Grizzlies. And I do think, I think you can play a deep rotation. You can do quicker substitutions. Over time, you can't go away from orthodoxy so much that you're not relying on your star players. I don't believe that.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm wildly skeptical of it, and it's just me here on my couch, but or whatever, my radio studio.
This team needs to be driven by Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jared Jackson.
And I was thinking back to in the Hubie days. You know, he did sort of some version of this, right?
He had one star, exactly. And that star was in like his second or third season.
Yeah, he didn't have these three dudes.
A different roster construction. That's right.
You do this when you don't have the stars at the top who can carry you. Then we're going to wear them down
I believe. I think the defensive issues and the playing time stuff, I believe both of these things are worked themselves out over the course of the season. But I also think that there's like 11 teams that want to be in the playoffs in the West, and like every game counts.
I mean, there's a very good chance that you can look up and you'll look up between who finishes sixth and who finishes seventh, and there'll be one game between them, and you can look back at the Bulls game.
And that was it. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree completely. I think ultimately, you got to win the games when the games are winnable, right? And I said this after the game one at Utah, and to me, this is another game that goes in the same category. The Houston game, you're just losing that game.
Right.
The Orlando game, you're winning that game. A lot of games are more up in the air, right? And I think in the Utah game, which they won by two, and the Chicago game, which they lost by three, they're playing a game of chicken with the playing time of their stars, right? Like in Utah, you play those guys, Ja and Desmond, just enough to win the game. And in Chicago, you played Desmond and Jaren not quite enough to win the game, right? I really think it's sort of that.
Can bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
It was. What, by the way, did you make of Jaws? I mean, again, who knows, right? But that, now it's we were thinking about what games is he going to play this week. He's going to play in one of the three.
Yeah, this is why, I was like, if you need to get a game off this week, let's play. I would have had him play. I don't know.
Right.
To me, it would have made more sense to play last night and maybe take off Wednesday. I would hope that maybe if he fills up to it, he'll play both halves of this back-to-back coming up, but I don't know.
All right. Other notable... Oh, Marcus Smart. It is interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying not to get too... I think it's easy to get down on a guy missing shots and ignore the rest of the game. And that could be misleading. I do wonder about the Marcus Smart plus 14 and the Scottie Pippen minus whatever, when like Scottie Pippen looked like he was playing pretty well, and you have to go back and watch it and really see whether there's a defensive thing there. I do think Marcus Smart was playing better basketball than his 0-for-11 shooting indicates.
Right.
It's hard to not play better than that.
Do you remember the Jared Bayless 0-for-11? Do you have any recollection of that?
I don't. But there was one moment, and at this point, this is in the second half, so at this point I think he's probably like 0-for-7 or whatever. But there was a play where like the ball came to him in the corner, and he took a three, and he clanked it, and they got the offensive rebound, and it swung back around to him in the same spot. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I understand the principle of if you're open and the ball comes to you, if you don't shoot, you're messing up the offense. You got to be situational. Like at that point, like put it on the ground and like go somewhere else, you know?
Yes.
So that was frustrating.
You would have liked an 0-for-5 from three, not an 0-for-8 from three.
That's right.
Anyone else stand out? As you point out, LaRavia had decent minutes. Scottie Pippen, it felt like.
That was a really good Jake LaRavia game. That was one of the better, that may be the best game he's ever played, considering that it wasn't like garbage time of a season. Like it was a real basketball game. Jake was good. Jaren was good, just didn't play enough.
Jaren was good, he just didn't play enough.
Right.
I mean, like that move in the first half was tremendous, the spin. And there's no update on Vince, on
well,
Luke,
he, Taylor, on... Taylor Jenkins said before the game that they were doing imaging on Vince Williams Jr. this week and would have an update after they do the imaging. So we're overdue for an update on Vince Williams Jr. He didn't say anything about Luke.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. That piece, I presume, is going up later today. Has not gone up yet. Midday. Look for that at the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're in need of a midweek boost, FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, has you covered with the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack. You may wonder, what's that? What's the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack? Every Wednesday, that's tomorrow, you can get parlay profit boosts on everything from spreads, over-unders, even player props. So don't let the weekend have all the fun. Take advantage of the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack. Check it out on Wednesdays. FanDuel, of course, to find your profit boost. All you got to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. Opt-in required. Max wager amount applies. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus profit boost tokens. Easy for me to say. Restrictions apply, including token expiration. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. Let's play Believe It or Not. By the way, I want to apologize again. No fish on Friday on Tuesday today. He is otherwise engaged. And it's great how downhearted he is when he misses. He really
feels like he let the team down.
He really feels like he let the team down. You know, he's no Aaron Rodgers. He is he's all about the team. Anyway, all right. Jeffrey, you were wrong about Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I'm still not ready to go there and say I believe that. I mean, if we're going to use the Giants as a barometer that all of a sudden you're getting better. I mean, I will say this, though. I do think that Tomlin is doing a better job with what works for him than
Arthur Smith.
Well, Arthur Smith, too. But basically, they're kind of going back to the formula that worked in Seattle, which is run, 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 play action, deep shots to the outside. Do not ask him to be the quarterback from the middle of the field. And those are his best throws. But, I mean, when you're watching him trying to make the basic throws, it's still, like, his best ball is this deep ball that he throws it up. And he's finding the one-on-ones, and they're using him very well. But I still don't think there's going to be teams that are able to contain him, keep him in the pocket. And you saw he still made several mistakes last night that kept the Giants in the game.
20 of 28, 278 yards, now holds the record. The Pittsburgh Steelers, legendary franchise, have never had a quarterback throw for as many yards in the first two games of his Steeler career as Russell Wilson. They had, let's be honest, they were winning, they were scrapping to win games before he got there. First half yesterday, 14 plays of 10 or more yards just in the first half. That is the most for the Steelers in a half since 2018. Of course, the star of the show last night was none other than Calvin Austin.
Yep.
Memphis's own. The punt return, 73 yards, and the 29-yard touchdown catch as well. So that was fun to see him flourishing. Nice piece. They did a piece of the CA where they all of Seth Hennigan's touchdown passes. They chronicled all 90, whatever.
Yep.
And Calvin.
91.
All 91. And the very first one was, in fact, caught by Calvin Austin III. How about that? Any idea? Did you read this piece? Any idea who has caught more touchdown passes from Hennigan than anyone else?
So I've not read it yet.
I would not have guessed. Sort of forgot this dude existed.
So obviously it's not Rock.
It's not Rock. Rock 6.
Wasn't Caden, was it? Priestborn?
Caden 7.
No clue.
Eddie Lewis.
Yeah, would not have gotten there.
Eddie Lewis with 11. Damir Blankensee with 10. Joseph Skates with 10. Caden Priestborn 7. Sean Dyke 7. Brendan Doyle 6. Rock Taylor 6.
91 touchdowns with only one guy catching 11. Is that the high?
Yeah. Eddie Lewis,
that's
11.
That's pretty good distribution.
It is pretty good distribution. Well, there's been, it's,
I mean, obviously he,
there's been, he's been here the whole time. The receivers have changed.
Right.
You know, like it's the nature of it. You know who would be winning this contest if he'd stuck around? Caden Prescorn.
Yeah.
Right, he would be winning the contest had he stuck around. Anyway, nice to see Calvin Austin flourishing as he does. Oh, Jeffrey, it should count as a touchdown if you get 1-2 feet down, or if you get 1 foot down twice.
So last night, of course, we yet again questioned whether or not we know what a catch is, and I feel like this happens about once a month. I do think 2 feet means 2 feet.
It means 2 feet. Of course it means 2 feet.
Like, the whole idea is that
you would be counting taps then.
Correct.
What does that even mean? Like, of course that doesn't count as a touchdown. 2 feet means 2 feet.
And also, it's like, he had the opportunity to get his feet down. Like, both him and Neighbors. Like, that was the other thing. I was just as frustrated when Neighbors didn't get his feet down. Like, they had the opportunity to make the play. Like, it is one of those ones where you saw it live in real time. You're like, well, that's a catch. But then when they slow it down to super slow-mo, you realize, like, oh, well, that's different. But to me, it's 2 feet, not 2 foot.
It is 2 feet, not 2 foot. By the way, on your Giants, how do you feel about the race to the bottom now? Let's take a look. We haven't really consulted the race to the bottom particularly. It feels like Carolina has it sewn up. They're really putrid, and they're 1-7, right? Then here are the teams with 2 wins. And
I got to tell you, the Titans are doing good work.
There is a jumble at 2. Like, look at this. You got Miami with 2 wins, New England with 2 wins, the Jets with 2 wins, Cleveland with 2 wins, Tennessee with 1. That's
the
right.
Titans are doing good work.
Then you got Jacksonville with 2 wins. You got Las Vegas with 2 wins. You got the Giants with 2 wins. You got New Orleans with 2 wins. And then, of course, you have, as you point out, the Titans and Panthers with 1 each. And the Titans they've started to sell.
The
Panthers will too, though. Panthers will too.
Yes. So the Panthers, I feel like, are the odds-on favorite because they're just the worst team. Then I'm putting the Titans next because they're selling. The ones that I'm going to kind of start to eliminate, like, the Dolphins with Tua, they're going to be better. The Browns with Jameis.
Right now, you've got the 2 1-win teams and the 8 2-win teams. So you could be as bad as you are right now and be picking 10th. So, okay, the Dolphins are going to win some games. I think the Jets will win some games. They're not in the running.
Yeah, I'm thinking the Jets are going to win some games. Carr's going to come back. The Saints will win some games.
How about New England? Is New England going to win any more games?
So,
legitimate competitor?
New England under Drake May has been much more watchable, and I get it. He got hurt yesterday. The thing, though, that I worry about with New England is that feels like a team ready to quit on their coach.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I think the Giants, if you made me pick, I would say
Giants going to be bottom five.
The over-under for me would be 4.5.
It's funny. A lot of these teams with 2 wins, like Jacksonville, should be better than this.
That's why I think some of those
Cleveland
teams
is going to be better than this now that they've fixed their quarterback, right? Like, yeah. Anyway.
To me, the Giants and the Raiders are the same thing.
Jeffrey, it is unforgivable if you run a grocery store not to offer baskets as a food collection option.
So are we including like the Aldi method where you have to pay the quarter?
We're leaving Aldi as his own.
Okay,
I couldn't believe it. Tom Clifton has Milo, the Bernie's
yes.
Mountain Dog, right? Clifton Art Gallery,
yep.
Right over there on Broadway. I couldn't believe this on Facebook. He said, if you go to the Midtown Kroger and you want 3-5 items,
sure,
right? You have to get, they do not offer baskets because of, if you can freaking believe it, the explanation was offered to him was theft.
Yeah.
People are stealing baskets?
Yeah.
What kind of grocery store, at this point, just get out of the grocery store business if you're not going to offer me a basket. A basket is the perfect thing for 5 items. You don't want to be pushing a cart with a wheel wobbling like that and whatever. Or even, honestly, even if it's a perfectly aligned wheels, the 1 or 3 little items in your big-ass cart, you need baskets. Get out of it if you can't. And why would people steal baskets anyway?
Well, a lot of people.
What do they use them for?
I mean, that's been the homeless encampments. Like people like
that. What do they need it for?
They're just going around town. Like you'll see it. They'll go around town. Like they keep their stuff in it.
No. They offer the. I'm talking the little carrying basket.
Oh.
They offer every grocery store does and has to.
The cart.
I'm talking about the basket. And no respected unhoused person would have a basket because it's their home. They have more stuff than in a basket. I don't understand the theft.
I don't know. Maybe people are like stocking up on meat and that and then just walking out. I've noticed this now that I've moved and the Poplar Plaza Kroger has become my regular Kroger.
I've never known the name of
Poplar Plaza. Poplar and Highland.
Oh, how is that Kroger?
It's big, it's fine, but like I've noticed that, you know, we have to have our receipt checked every time. Like
they check your receipts.
Oh yeah, and there's two armed guards. Yeah,
really?
Yeah,
that's the difference between the Sanderlin Kroger and the
like. The Sanderlin has like someone like strolling around in like a car, a security.
Like the whole Costco checking the receipt thing's ridiculous. The Costco they check your receipt, but here's the thing: you go to Costco, you get a million things because you go not that often, you know, at least for me. I got a million things. And how do they possibly know what I paid for everything? It seems ridiculous.
I mean, more times than not, they're counting.
But they're counting up to 62? I don't get four things at Costco.
Yeah. I mean, I also think there's a difference also at Costco and Sam's because it's baked in. Like, we don't, they've always checked the receipt.
Yeah. I very clearly get the benefit of looking like a 63-year-old white guy. Well, and so they're not.
Well, and also, like, the average item at Costco costs more.
Anyway, all right. Yankees are toast.
Yes, I do believe that. I just think the Dodgers are better. Like I know, spoiler alert, they're up 3-0, but it just feels like every time the Dodgers have to make a big play, get a big hit, get a zero, it feels like they're able to do it. Whereas everything that the Yankees are doing just feels so difficult. And then on top of that, like the guy that's supposed to be your three-hole hitter, the guy that's carrying the load. I mean, he has been awful.
He has been awful, and that is a tough.
You know, it's also
Aaron
bad.
Judge, 1 of 12, 7 strikeouts.
You know,
by the
also
way, here's one stat. Let me get it. So we know that no team has come back from 3-0 in the World Series to win. Right at this, whatever.
Right.
Here's the amazing thing: is no team has come back from a 3-0 World Series deficit to make it to a Game 5 since 1970.
Yeah, because like when it's over, it's over.
When it's over, it's over.
Yeah, to me though, like the other depressing thing about Judge was last night, like he had like just like a routine fly out to left, and because he made contact, like everyone like went nuts and thought it was gone. It was like, I don't know, 30 feet short. That's a tough scene.
Jeffrey, you subscribe to Halloweek, meaning it's a lot like, you've talked about this before, how some people like to have a birthday week, right? I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
I don't believe you get a birthday week.
You get a day. It's literally in the name.
It is in the name.
Day.
I think you've indicated before that you think this is broken down by gender.
Yes. It's not exclusive.
Women are not exclusive. Women are more inclined to want a birthday week than men.
Yes.
Do you know any men who've wanted a birthday week?
I knew a couple of guys in college, but it was almost like there was like a group of three of them that had their birthday within days of each other, and so we called it birthday week,
different.
But that was
that's
a different
thing. Other people calling it birthday week, that's a totally different situation. No, literally, it's in the freaking name.
It's day.
Birthday. It's day. You get a day. Now, I'm tweaking the name, and we're calling it Halloweek. I learned this because I read the early word from Bianca over at the Daily Memphian, and she referred to Halloweek, meaning, sure, Thursday's Halloween, but really, we're celebrating Halloween all week long, believe it or not.
I don't believe this, but I'm not the right person. I've never been the biggest Halloween guy. Like, in all forms. Like, I didn't, like, hate it as a kid, because obviously it's, like, candy and whatnot, but, like, I've never loved the whole costume element. even like when you go to college and everybody's like, oh, it's
no, the, I've never been a
Halloween guy.
I understand people who do, and that's great, whatever else. Do you like the big skeletons? Skelly?
Not really.
You like the big skeletons?
I like the dog one's fine.
This college football playoff thing is going to be a messy problem.
I think I do believe this. I think what we're going to start seeing is, I just think that a lot of these, like, we're going to have so many unbalanced schedules, and you're going to have so many tiebreakers, and even if, like, you're not getting these absurd scenarios that some people are pointing out, like a 9-team tie in this in the SEC, did you realize this? Georgia now has to root for Alabama to beat LSU so that that would get them into, because of...
Because what? Wait, why is this? Explain.
So the tiebreaker would be you would need...
Tiebreaker between who?
So Alabama... So basically, you would need Alabama... Georgia's loss is Alabama. And if LSU beats Alabama, that knocks them out. And the one, the head-to-head common opponent would be Alabama with one loss LSU, and Georgia would lose the tiebreaker because Georgia lost Alabama and LSU would have beaten Alabama. Like, we're going to start to get into these things.
Aren't there going to be, well, just, like, let's take Tennessee's situation, right? They still got Georgia,
yep.
Right? So let's stipulate, just for the purposes of this, that they lose to Georgia.
Okay.
Okay? In that circumstance, Tennessee is not going to the SEC title game. Do we agree with that?
Yes, I think that's likely.
Okay. So where are they situated at that point? Where will they be situated in terms of the likelihood that they will get into the playoff?
So then it becomes a question of, do you like 6-2 LSU or 6-2?
Who are we saying in that universe? Georgia's, we're going to say no, Georgia's goes to the title game and they're in and they're making the playoff whether they win it or lose it, right?
Right.
I was saying Texas A&M is going to the title game?
I think I would say the winner of A&M Texas.
Okay, the winner of Texas A, or Texas A&M.
Correct.
And they will have how many?
That team will have likely one loss, although it's worth noting A&M goes to South Carolina on Saturday night, and they're only like a two-point favorite.
If Texas beats A&M.
Yes, they're
Texas
likely.
Texas A&M runs the rest of the table. Texas is likely to go play Georgia. Both those teams make it win or lose.
So then
in the
you run
championship
it,
game.
Then you could
and then
run
you've
into,
got a Texas A&M Tennessee problem.
Well, no. Then you also have a at that point. Like if you're stipulating Texas A&M's only conference loss is Texas on the last night of the year, they're all 7-1.
Oh my God!
You see what I'm saying? Like it's you don't yeah, even
for me the question isn't really just who's going to make the title game.
It's how do you
sort through the rest?
Correct.
To pick, and you know what? To me, what this is going to do, it's going to put instant pressure to make it 16.
Well, then,
it's going to be
but
instant
then you run
pressure
weird,
to go to 16.
See, I think the instant pressure is going to be 9-game conference schedule.
Well, that is certainly true, and they're paying for the fact that they didn't do that.
Correct, because now I don't know if you saw Matt Hayes, who's now at USA Today. He had a story yesterday from SEC coaches behind the scenes and ADs. They're upset that Texas's schedule has been so soft for conference play and that they've, you know, dog walked them essentially
right
to the title game. But then you run into this weird situation of what happens if, to me, it's like if 11-1 Georgia is outside of the SEC championship game, they're still going to, I think, be the highest ranked SEC team. And so now you've run into this situation where, okay, Georgia gets to be the 5 seed, and there's some question of, well, do you for sure want to go to the SEC title game? The problem that I keep seeing is they want to hold up the value of these championship games, but there's just not enough common opponents. The schedules are so unbalanced that it almost makes it feel like that it's not really a championship
right
game.
Right. These are randomly chosen
correct
teams that will be appearing in a championship
correct
game. All right, we got to take a break. Back in a moment, I will tell you, if you are selling your home, call Josh Hysa. Heck, we had someone who wanted Taylor Jenkins to call Josh Hysa. That seemed premature to me. But Trudy called Josh Hysa, heard us talking about him, and next thing you know, had multiple offers. It's great to have multiple offers. Like, if you get one offer, you're like, what if they come in 40 grand underneath you? Whatever. What do you do then? What you want is multiple offers on your home. She did it and had multiple offers within 24 hours. Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realty, flexible fees, no upfront cost, let you out of contract at any time, knows how to market your home. Call him today if you are thinking of selling your home. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers. .com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. I still had things to say, Jeffrey. I guess I got another show tomorrow. If you need a new auto loan, a new home loan, or a new financial institution, I'll tell you this. I've had banks that have been sold three times since I've been there, and it gets to be irritating, honestly. It's one of the reasons that it's a pleasure to bank with Leaders Credit Union. Hey, they do good stuff in the community. I was just reading about they've given away $35,000 to local schools recently through their LEADS program. But maybe you're more interested in the rates they offer and the technology they offer and the service they offer. And if so, for example, they got the 5.25 APY certificate special. Watch your money grow. 5.25% APY, high yield, limited time offer. Don't miss out on that. All you have to do, learn more, go to leaderscu.com/ESPN for full details or download the app. You'll see for yourself what we have seen. Fabulous technology, great rates. It is Leaders. leaderscu.com/ESPN. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson at 11:25. Jason Fitz at 1:25. Tim Murray, of course, joining me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. It's Tuesday, so that means Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Our Work is Done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.